I'm Matt Katz, in for Tanzina Vega, and you're listening to The Takeaway. This week on the show, we're visiting a different part of the world each day to see how it's managing the COVID-19 pandemic. Yesterday, we took you to Sweden. Today, we go to East Africa, where a trifecta of crises is endangering people and raising fears of a mass famine. Along with the coronavirus, the region is dealing with flooding, as well as swarms of billions of desert locusts, harming food production and causing fears of widespread famine. And as you can imagine, with the three crises combined, countries in the region are less equipped than usual to manage any of these problems. I asked Samuel Getachew, local journalist in Ethiopia with The Reporter, about all of this, including how locusts have affected food production in the region so far.
They've literally destroyed it, and Ethiopia doesn't have the equipment to even prevent it from spreading all over the country and in neighboring countries as well. The UN has donated helicopters and so on, but the impact is so large and so huge that Ethiopia is asked for help from outside countries because it can no longer afford to protect the land that has been destroyed.
Is that help forthcoming?
Many countries are beginning to make a donation to the cause. The UN has managed to raise 70% of the money that's needed to prevent the spread of locusts. But Ethiopia remains to be a country that's in need of support. And the help, the call for help is louder than ever because more people are expected to be suffering because of shortage of food.
This is terrible timing amid a global pandemic. What does East Africa look like right now in terms of COVID-19?
The government gives you official numbers, but it's just like in the U.S., whenever the president tells you numbers, you hardly believe the numbers anymore because deep down we know that the numbers are much, much higher than that are given to the public. Ethiopia is a population of 110 million people, but the government is claiming to only have 350 positive cases out of 110 million people. So, sometimes the numbers are sugar-coated, and we know that deep down, we know the number is much, much higher than.
Right. Sounds familiar. So what is the Ethiopian government doing? What are they saying they're doing in terms of responding to the crisis?
They're doing the usual thing, which is, preventing people from going outside at night. They're closing clubs and restaurants and pubs after 7 p.m. The buses are not crowded anymore because they could only carry so many people. The taxis are only allowed to take few passengers. The police are on the lookout for people that refuse to wear masks. I think they're trying to do the best from what they have. But, and at least in my generation, we've never had this kind of case, not just in Ethiopia, but in the world. So we were learning from the best. We're learning from the U.S., the experiences of the U.S., London and the Rome and the European nations. But I don't think we have the kinds of numbers we're seeing in the U.S. or in the U.K. At least it's not visible to us.
Are there enough medical resources to handle the pandemic if the numbers increase to a great extent?
Definitely not. The Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed spoke to the President, Donald Trump, on the phone, and the U.S. has pledged to donate, to give, not just to Ethiopia. According to the President's Twitter account, he's been having phone calls to many, many African countries. But the kind of resources Ethiopia has is hardly enough to even serve the capital city, which I reside in. The Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed won the Nobel Peace Prize last year, so he's on a political honeymoon. Many, many countries have listened to him. They're fascinated by his story. He's like the Justin Trudeau of the moment. So he, many, many countries have a place to support his cause, which is the Ethiopian cause.
You mentioned that leadership has been referencing the fact that they've been in communication with the United States and President Trump. Is the international community backing up those words with dollars and funds to assist Ethiopia and other countries in the region right now?
I think so. Whenever the U.S. is missing at the table, there's the Scandinavian countries that are coming up with resources and so on. Canada, the Prime Minister of Canada was just in town in February. And, you know, Ethiopia has lots of partners and friends in many, many countries. It helps to have a Nobel Peace Prize laureate as Prime Minister because, you know, nobody would ignore your calls. That's the benefit of, I think, winning the Nobel Peace Prize. But, you know, many people are coming on board and trying to help Ethiopia move forward and become more self-sufficient.
Has there been any change in terms of U.S. funding for Ethiopia under the Trump administration? And is it going one direction or another direction?
Slowly. You know, the funding formula that was promoted by the president, President Trump, hasn't had impact in Ethiopia yet. You know, if he was to be reelected in November, that's when Ethiopia will begin to really feel the legacy of Trump, which is a government that's anti-aid and more, you know, the U.S. interest focused. But so far, USAID is one of the biggest development partners in Ethiopia, and they've been doing fantastic work in all over the country. They're never perfect, but I think they're the ideal U.S. policy that that is implemented in Ethiopia.
And the prime minister gets his phone calls answered by the president, and that's probably something that is greatly valued, I imagine.
Maybe he wants to get some wisdom from the prime minister of Ethiopia so he could perhaps win the Nobel Peace Prize next year.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we'll see what happens. if he does, we'll have you back on to talk about it. That would be interesting.
For sure.
Samuel Getachew is a local journalist in Ethiopia with The Reporter. Samuel, thank you so much for your insights.
Thank you.